I'm Georgie Crawford. You're listening to the Good Glow podcast. Throughout my treatment for breast cancer, I've realised the importance of self-care. Whether that's a 5K run, a checkup with your GP, or even a 5-minute dip in the sea, the time has come for us to put ourselves higher on our own to-do list. This season, I've teamed up with Spotlight Oral Care. I know how important oral care is to our overall health and how we really need to look after our teeth and gums by using the best products. I've been using the Spotlight Oral Care Sonic Toothbrush and I love that it gives me that dentist clean feeling and is much more effective than a manual brush and less abrasive. Use the discount code GOODGLOW25 on spotlightoralcare.com to get 25% off the entire range. Why not pick up some perfect stocking fillers this Christmas and get them delivered straight to your front door? This week on the Good Glow podcast, I speak to Amanda Byram, one of Ireland's most loved TV presenters and wellness advocates. Amanda talks to me today about how we can live well. With COVID taking a toll on many of us, I think Amanda's advice will really hit home. She speaks about mental health, physical health, and health for your soul. Her new book, The Switch, guides you through little steps we can take to make our life a happier place. Today, she speaks about how we can change that voice in our head that tells us that we're not good enough, that we're not successful enough, that we can't do something. She talks to me about life in LA as a presenter on some of the biggest shows in America and how she believes she manifested her successful career, how she fuels her body with the best of foods, and how much her life has changed over the past 10 years. I hope you will love this episode and I hope it helps anyone who may be going through a tough time. Amanda, thank you so much for joining me on the Good Glow today. I have been glued to your book, The Switch, all week. There are so many amazing lessons to be learned. So thank you for that gift.
Oh, no, thank you. I'm such a huge fan of yours. And I'm so honestly, genuinely so thrilled to be on your podcast, finally. And thank you for those kind words. That's really, really lovely. I've had some really wonderful and positive feedback, which I suppose when you spend a year and a half of your life pouring into something, and of course you never really know if something is going to be, you know, received well or accepted, and it's been mind-blowing, that the brilliant feedback. So I'm thrilled to be here chatting to you in particular and chatting about the book.
Just in terms of the book, and what I found so great about it is I think there's a lot of aha moments in it, and I love aha moments because I've had so many since I was diagnosed with cancer and I've learned so much along this journey. And I love that in each chapter you talk about switch tips, and it's not preachy, but it's just little things that we can do, I suppose, to improve our life.
Absolutely. And I too love aha moments. They're sort of they really are. I got the word from Oprah. I don't know if you did or not, but
yes,
And I remember when I heard that first years ago, I thought, that's genius. And everybody has their own little way of having their aha moment, you know, that light bulb moment. And for me, I transpired that into my switch moment. And, you know, I guess for me, it wasn't even that split second. You know, sometimes things accumulate over a period of time. Sometimes actually, you know, like with you, what happened to you and how you got through it. I don't know if there was a moment in time when you sort of decided that things were going to change or how you were going to make this positive and how you were going to get through it. For me, it was an accumulation of many, many years of sort of doing things wrong and trying to learn how to do them the right way and then sort of doing them wrong again. And then, you know, assimilating the information and the education. And then finally, having that moment where I went, oh my God, I'm exhausted. I'm exhausted both physically and both mentally. And, you know, it's just taking so much from me and so much from my life that I've spent nearly three decades now of beating myself up, of trying to be perfect, of trying to people please, of trying to do the right thing at the right time, not living with integrity, you know, trying to yo-yo diet, trying to do all of these things, trying to be the best woman, I suppose, the best sister, the best daughter, the best career woman, the best in shape, the best reader, the best of everything. And, you know, for me, it's sort of my switch moment came as I was approaching my 40s and I realized that I'd spent the guts of 3 decades just knackering myself out, really. Mm. And I knew that it was time to change. And so that moment for me sort of it came all at once. And yet it was an accumulation of many, many occasions that I had built up. And so for me, how I sort of made that switch was firstly through education, because all of the mistakes that I was making were made because I wasn't educated about my body. I wasn't educated about food. You know, I was doing these crazy, stupid diets. I was literally doing every diet under the sun. So I'd done the tomato soup diet, the cabbage soup diet, Atkins diet, which took over my life for 3 years, believe it or not. The protein phase only, should I say. We shall get into that. You know, the Master Cleanse diet, all of these crazy diets. And, you know, just sort of understanding finally when I studied nutrition what food is, why it serves us, the reason we eat carbs, why that turns into an ATP energy system. Then I was over exercising and I couldn't understand, you know, why I felt this incessant need to constantly work out to sort of work off all the calories or look my best or be in shape. So I studied the body. I studied to be a personal trainer to understand, you know, physiologically why we do the things we do, what muscles work and why they work. And when I learned that actually training smarter, not harder, so actually training less but more intensely for a shorter period of time and training in the correct way, I realized that I was just taking this huge sigh of relief. I was training much less. I was doing the exercises that I actually enjoyed. And all of these things combined with, I suppose, mental health is the key, and we'll get to that in a second, just it's sort of like this all over perspective was really the beginning of my journey to making the switch to understanding. And so the book is sort of a distillation, so to speak, of 3 decades worth of mistakes, of making them, of learning from them. And, you know, and I just really felt it was really important that if I could spread some knowledge of the things that I did wrong and the things that made me live in a healthier, happier, more balanced, calm place to even one person, then that would be my job done. And hopefully I can spread that word. And just talking about mental health, I suppose, coming back to that, when I started writing the book, actually, originally, it was going to be about health and fitness, you know, because everybody said, oh, you're really into your health and fitness and you understand the body and that's brilliant. And you're in your 40s and you look good. And I thought, oh, great. OK, well, why don't we write a book about how to look good in your 40s and beyond? Mm-hmm. And as I started to write, you know, puke on the page, as they say to authors to do, which isn't a pretty sight, really, but, you know, not physically, but you know, sort of like throw your words out. The more I was writing, the more it was just staying. It was coming away from that and going straight for the mental health part, because I realized really quickly that without mental health, nothing else, physical health would be so fleeting and just wouldn't lead to happiness. So, you know, the book sort of, I hope for people, can tie in lots of different areas of mental health, of physical health, of health for your soul, for your body, and just an all over sort of Bible, so to speak, where people can come to and take snippets of, like you say, aha moments and switch tips and sort of there's you mentioned the word preach, and I'm really glad you did, because it was one of the things I was really, really mindful of when I started writing the book, because for me, I never liked to be preached to. So I found that, you know, when I did all of the things I did, I came to it in my own time. And that's because I sort of was a bit resistant to listening to people who I knew were telling the truth. I just didn't want to listen because they were shoving information down my throat. So for me, I thought the best way for me to write this book is twofold. One, be really, 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 really honest, be raw, be open, wear my heart on my sleeve, so that I can resonate with anyone who's got the same similar traits of actions that I had going through it. And then the other thing that was really important for me was, rather than to say, don't do this, do this, this is good, this is bad, I thought, why don't I impart the knowledge that I learned? And that knowledge, then someone reading the book can take that knowledge and with their own, you know, their own independent thoughts go, actually, that makes sense. Mm-hmm. I totally get that now. And that's why the body does this, or this why the mind does that. And leave it up to people to make their own decision, because I think it's really important to give information and then allow people that moment to understand, do I want to make the switch or do I not? And I say very early on in the book, until you're in a place where you're ready to make that switch, then no amount of information is going to help you.
when I go out and I do my corporate talks and I'm standing in front of a room of really busy girls in their mid-20s, you know, burning the candle at both ends. And like you in this book, like you're just sharing your story and hoping that someone takes something from it. So when I go out there, I'm trying to say to people, look after yourself now, because don't get to the point where I was when I was 32 and my whole world turned upside down because I got breast cancer. So little things that you can start to do on a daily basis to look after yourself better really will pay off. And I loved what you said in the book, that it's never too late to start, because another amazing Oprah quote that I think about all the time is, you have a right to change your mind. And just because you are a certain way for most of your life, and maybe you didn't exercise and you didn't eat well, doesn't mean that you can't change and that you can't change things going forward.
Oh, you've hit so many nails on the head there. First of all, you know, your story is so inspirational, and I'm not surprised to how women just really flock to you for information and for that inspiration, because you've lived it, you know, you've lived that, exactly that, when you sort of get to burning the candle at both ends, and then all of a sudden, you know, you're faced with this, with the situation that is mind-blowing and so unprecedented to anything you've ever experienced before, and you think, oh my God, why didn't I do something about this before? When we're children, we are told that we are the best at everything. You know, we're championed by our parents, by our aunties and uncles, by our siblings. You know, we've done the best poo-poo. You know, we came down the slide the best. Oh, look at you. You can sing like an angel, right? And then you can sort of get into your teens and your late teens, and all of a sudden things are a bit naughty, and you shouldn't do this and you shouldn't do that. And your friends are telling you that things, you know, aren't quite right, or you didn't get enough likes on your social media. And then you get into your 20s and you get into the workplace, and all of a sudden you're doing things wrong according to your boss, or, you know, you didn't quite come up to standard, you didn't hit that target. And then you get into your 30s and you know, possibly you're married at this point or have children, and you're sort of, people are telling you you're not doing things the right way. And all of a sudden you're in this whirlwind of woe where you think, oh, I'm such a terrible person. I'm an idiot. I'm silly. I'm foolish. I'm not good enough. I'm this and I'm that. So that inner voice that I talk about a lot in the book and how to eliminate it, all of a sudden, those lovely, lovely voices that your parents and your siblings and your aunties and uncles had for you when you were a kid, they're gone, because this bigger voice is shouting in your other ear. And that's the voice that's winning over all the time. And then we turn to self-help, because we're so lost at this point that we think someone's written something, or someone said something, or I've watched Oprah's show and that made sense. Now, here's my point. Why don't we teach things like mindfulness, things like nutrition, things like mental health, things such as, you know, the reasons we eat food, the basics of physical health, you know, all of these things that we sort of learn when, like you say, it's never too late. However, it's at a stage where we've got to where we've hit a wall. So I think it's really important that from a very, very early age, we start teaching our children how to sort of live calmer, more balanced, healthier lives. Social media obviously doesn't help, not in the slightest. And what I would say is that you're exactly right again. There is no wrong time. At any age, you can make these changes. You know, I talk about, I was 15 when my body image issue started. So if I'd had the knowledge in this book when I was 15, I wouldn't have had half the anguish and pain emotionally and physically than I would have. And, you know, anyone in their mid-20s or their 30s, you know, with children or obsessed with clean eating or obsessed with exercising, or in their 40s, you know, sort of 50s, struggling between ailing parents and teens and 60s and autumnal years and beyond, there is no wrong time to make this switch. I'm speaking to a couple of women who are, one is 62 and one is 68 at the moment, who are only now starting to understand that it's not too late for them. Because it's something else you just said there which just resonated with me. I have a lot of people who come to me and say, well, it's sort of too late for me, or I've always been like this, or I was born like that, or it's just sort of in me. I am a type personality, or I am a perfectionist. Well, no, we're not. These are all learned behaviors. We were born without any behaviors. And so all of these behaviors are learned. So if you can learn something, you can unlearn it. And I think that's a really key sort of message for people to understand, is that we all have the power. We've all got that within us to change and to learn. And, you know, even something as small as I'm doing a 21-day challenge at the moment on Instagram with my followers, that 21 days is the amount of time that it takes for the brain's plasticity to sort of learn new behaviors. So all it takes is to undo something for 21 days, 3 weeks, that's it. And all of a sudden that thing becomes a habit, a good habit. Mm-hmm. You know, we weren't born brushing our teeth. We learned how to brush our teeth, and yet we do it every day without fail, two times a day. We don't even think about it. So, yeah, I mean, you've hit so many nails on the head, like I say, that all of that's so important. And I think, you know, you're dead right when you speak to people at those talks that, you know, it's never too late, that there's always time to make a change.
And I think the biggest aha moment that a lot of people have learned, you know, as they go through life, is that it's okay to make yourself a priority. And sometimes you need to hear those words out loud.
And especially people who have productive lives, because we don't say the word busy anymore, and, you know, have children. And so therefore, by their very nature, children need your attention and they need your love and they need your support and they are dependent on you. And so for a lot of people, it's very difficult for them to really compartmentalize being a parent or being a career person or being a, you know, whatever it might be, a daughter, a mother, a sister, a girlfriend, a wife, a partner, whatever, that actually it's okay to put yourself first, like you say. It's okay to look in the mirror every morning and go, you know what, you rock. You're brilliant. How often do we say that kind of stuff to ourselves? We don't. We really, really don't. And I think, you know, it's so important, because look, when you're on an aeroplane, those days, you know, remember aeroplanes. But what's the first thing that they say in that safety talk? They say, you know, if you have a child, put the mask on yourself first before you look after your child. Why do they say that? Well, because if you're not safe, your child's not going to be safe. So there's no point in putting the mask on your child first. You know, you've got to protect yourself before anything else in your bubble can really become affected and happy and calm. And that, you know, our mental health really ripples out through our very being. And if you're in a bad mood, the chances are, I can tell, you know, and that if you're having a really bad day, the chances are your children can tell, your partner can tell, your family can tell, your friends can tell, your colleagues can tell. So it's not like we're fooling anyone. Mm-hmm. And the easiest thing to do is switch the narrative. So I talk a lot in the book about switching the language with which we talk to ourselves. That self-love that you talk about, Georgie, is really important. You know, you have to speak to yourself with kindness. You have to speak to yourself with the kind of love actually that you would give a child. You know, I talked recently about a trick that really, really helps me, is that I have a photograph of myself as a 3-year-old. And I, if I'm ever having a bad time, or if I ever realize that I'm speaking unkindly to myself, and when I say that, I don't mean, you know, I'm screaming, effing and blinding at myself. Something as simple as saying, oh, God, you're so stupid. Why did you do that? You wouldn't say that to a 3-year-old child. And yet that 3-year-old child in that photograph that I have is me. It's the same girl. It's the same kid. It's the same woman. It's the same teenager. It's the same being. It's the same eyes looking at you, the same brain thinking, the same voice speaking. So it's a really great tip. When you feel like you're being hard on yourself or you're being cruel to yourself, pull out a photograph of yourself at 3 years of age or 5 years of age and look at that picture and say, I'm so sorry. I didn't mean to speak to you like that. I genuinely didn't mean to. And I won't do that again, I promise you. And, you know, I think that's a really powerful tool, that we just have to be kind to ourselves, like you say, at all times. It's so important, because, look, if we're not kind to ourselves, then how can we expect the world to be kind back if we don't treat our own selves with respect?
God, amazing words, Amanda. Do you mind me asking about
life in America. Like, you have a career that many people could only dream of, and you were so successful in Ireland, in the UK, and then you went off and everyone in Ireland was so proud of you flying the flag on all of these amazing shows. But what was it like behind the scenes for you over there?
It's interesting because, you know, I do look back very fondly on my time over there. I feel like I manifested that life, because I do believe very firmly in manifestation. And
really?
Very much so. I believe truly in, if you believe in something enough, that the universe will conspire to help you to do it. So for me, manifestation and belief in yourself is really, really key. Now, I work in an industry, obviously, where you get very many knockbacks, and people will tell you on many an occasion, you're not good enough. Well, they don't quite say that, but they say no, which means that you're not good enough, or you're not right. You know, when I was modeling and I didn't get a job, I thought it was because I wasn't pretty enough, or I wasn't thin enough, or I wasn't anything enough. You know, always this self-flagellation. When I went to America, interestingly, it sort of happened because I manifested that dream. And I had a dream when I was about 8 years old, and I have a diary that actually literally explains a scene that I lived when I got to America, which was, I was driving in a Bobby Ewing car, the white Mercedes, the convertible, and I saw this hill and I saw this sign, and it was all quite vague at the time, but there was this very specific motorway, which of course at 8 years old I didn't really know what a motorway was, and it was this sensation, and there were palm trees, etc. And when I got my first job over there, which sort of happened by chance, but I suppose when I look back on it, it all kind of clicked into the manifestation part of it. And I'm driving this car along the freeway, the 405 freeway, which if anyone's been to LA, they'll know. And I look up and I see the Hollywood sign. And all of a sudden, I just, there was this crazy moment of going, oh, this is that dream. This is that manifestation I had, that when I grew up, I actually wanted to marry the Karate Kid. That's by the by. I ended up dating a guy from New Jersey, in fact, who was a black belt in karate.
Okay.
Not quite Ralph Macchio, but, you know. America for me was an incredible dream come true. It really was. And I loved every minute of it. I think, interestingly, you know, I there's two parts to that. I look back on my time and my career, and I don't think in the past I've ever really applauded myself for the things I've done, because I lived very much in a world where the next thing was just as important. So I would never really stop and sort of, you know, applaud my own success for something, because it's not a very, I didn't think it was a very elegant thing to do. So, you know, I got this job on Fox in America. That was brilliant. Now what's next? So then I got the next job on Fox in America. Okay, brilliant. Now what's next? And so then it was the next thing, and the next thing, and the next thing. And actually, when I was writing the book, I realized that I had done something that was a very good tip for readers, which was writing my own CV and sort of looking at my life like a little mini showreel, so to speak. So snippets of my life, and view them as this little film that I had made of myself. And we very, very rarely clap ourselves on the back. And it was a really brilliant chance for me to go, oh, I did that, and I did that, and I did that. Now, you don't have to work in television to have those successes. You bore a child, amazing. You know, you took the stairs instead of the lift, brilliant. You know, you've done, on a daily basis, we do so many brilliant things that we really don't applaud ourselves for. So I often tell people, you know, I'm digressing a little bit, I will come back to it, I promise, but it made me realize, you know, the CV of life is the CV of your everyday life. You know, just applaud it and kind of be so proud of yourself for everything you do.
I'll get back to that conversation in just a minute, but first I wanted to give you an update on my Spotlight Oral Care Teeth Whitening Strips that I'm wearing for an hour a day for 2 weeks. Now that my aligners are gone, I'm really keen to whiten my teeth and have a healthy smile, and I've seen instant results. Spotlight Oral Care has something for everyone and was founded by two dentists, so you can be rest assured that the products are safe and effective. They are free from toxins, cruelty-free and palm oil-free, and their toothpaste tubes are 100% recyclable. Check out spotlightoralcare.com for more. Now, back to my conversation.
And coming back to the America thing, I told you I'd come back to it. interestingly, you know, I was very, very happy out there until the end when I got very homesick and I really missed my family. And I came home one year and my mum said, it's very strange. You know, you're sort of very down on yourself. You're kind of saying that you feel this way and you feel that way. And you don't feel your teeth are yellow or you feel fat or you're not this and you're not that. She said, that's so unlike you. And I think maybe living out there might have just sort of, I don't know, spurred a little modicum of self-criticism. Maybe it's because you're surrounded by this idea of perfection all the time. Yeah. Everybody looks perfect. Everybody has kind of, you know, got the perfect car, the perfect job. They've got an ist for everything. They've got a gynecologist and a manicurist, diatrist and a vaginologist. I mean, literally everything is perfect down to there is a doctor to make your vagina perfect. I am not lying about that.
Oh my God.
Oh yes. That's the truth. So, you know, I do look back very fondly because now I have to look back on it with pure love. And it was a really great thing to have done and something to sort of tick a box and sort of say, I did that. That's brilliant. I lived in another country all by myself. I got myself a mortgage all by myself. So, yeah, life is one big, brilliant journey, as I'm sure you know all too well with everything that you've been through as well. So, you know, like you say, to come out the other side and just kind of applaud it is the best way to go forward.
Yeah, and it's so lovely to hear that, you know, you look back at that time with fond memories. What would you say the biggest changes that you've made over, I suppose, the last 10 years in your life have been?
Oh my gosh, so many. And interestingly, the last decade has probably been the one where most of my changes have happened. Mm-hmm. Because for the longest time, you know, I was sort of going around in a vicious circle of thinking that I was rectifying mistakes and then just making the same mistakes all over again. And then getting to that place that I said earlier, which was, oh, I guess it's just me. I'm just like this. So I think there's several. How I speak to myself has been a huge, huge change for me. You know, I tend to really be mindful about the language that I use around myself and the language that I use towards others. I talk a lot about that in the book Neuro-Linguistic Programming and switching out little words, even words like but for and. So, Georgie, your podcast is brilliant, but the second I say but, that negates everything that comes before, right? So You would say and instead of but. So in any situation where you think you're going to say but, switch it for and.
Okay.
You know, just tiny little tips and tricks like that about the way we speak are so powerful. Like I talk about the compliment syndrome as well. We are so accustomed to rejecting compliments that actually we don't realise how powerful that is for our own psyche. God, you look brilliant. No, don't you? I'm like a fat old whale, for God's sake, you know. And it's just, it used to be my go-to. It was my absolute, a knee-jerk reaction was to just reject a compliment so that I would make everyone else feel okay.
Yeah.
And actually what that's doing is you're not only telling yourself that you're an old whale or that your dress is a cheapy thing from Zara, you're actually telling the person who's given you the compliment that they're dreaming. Listen, you're lying or you're drunk. What, something's going on, but I don't believe what you've just told me. And then after a period of time, why should that person bother giving you a compliment anymore? Because if you're going to keep rejecting it, then what's the point, right? And so then the external voices are now not as loud as the internal voice telling you that you're this a fat old whale or you're this whatever. And so that's really important. So if anyone ever compliments me, it was a huge, huge learning curve for me to say, thank you. That's really, really kind of you. Thank you so much. End. And there's that silence and then you go with it. And it's so empowering. It's really brilliant. So I think that's something really key. The other things that I've learned over the last 10 years are definitely about nutrition and my body. I mean, the stuff I've learned about food and why it's good for us, why carbs are so good for us. You know, I went through, like I was saying earlier, I did the protein phase only of the Atkins diet for 3 years. So not a carb, not a vegetable, not a fruit passed my lips. I lived on chicken breast. I lived on sliced hams. I lived on anything that had protein, you know, eggs, etc. I mean, talk about flatulence and bloating and all of this stuff. But it was because this idea that high protein was good. And so in the book, I thought it was really, really important to explain to people why protein is good in certain amounts, why it's not in large amounts, why carbs are absolutely vital for a healthy body, and not just a healthy body, but a healthy mind, because our body just thrives on ATP and energy, and our brain is one of the biggest muscles in our body for consuming calories. So you might find, if you're doing a day of sort of writing and you're studying and you're prepping for one of your corporates, by the end of it, you've been sitting in a chair, but you're starving and you're thinking, why am I so hungry? I could eat a horse. Well, it's because your brain is consuming so many calories that it needs that energy. And so how I existed without carbs for so long, I have no idea. So now I think for me, the biggest change, both in nutrition, in the things that I eat, how I exercise, has become all about balance. And I remember saying 10 years ago, because that's the number that you gave me 10 years ago, without a doubt, I would have always come up with the same answer. Oh, I cannot deal with balance. Balance is my biggest downfall. I don't know what balance is. I'm an all or nothing kind of girl. I love everything, not in moderation, but I like to binge and purge. And it's almost like I wore this sort of imbalance around my neck with a chain, you know, just kind of like weighing me down, thinking that it was sort of like a medal that I should be proud of. And actually, it was the complete opposite, because balance is the only thing that's sort of given me this peace, because now my body is at peace, my mind is at peace. You know, everything sort of just, it's like this weighing scales, and it's finally just sort of teetered to the middle. And that's where we find pure happiness.
So what sort of foods are you eating on a daily basis? Is everything homemade? Is cooking a big part of your life now?
Food is absolutely a gift, right? If you eat everything in moderation, I eat chocolate, I eat crisps, I eat cake, I eat brownies, I eat sushi. I love things like, you know, interestingly, my body now prefers healthy food, because when you feed it everything, it picks and chooses for you. You know, when you don't binge on something. So if you deprive yourself of a carb, of a fat or a protein, if you deprive yourself of those lovely gummy bears that you've been eyeing up all week, if you deprive yourself of that pizza, well, then obviously you're going to crave it even more. So just give it to yourself. Just don't have five pizzas, you know, because in no world do we need five pizzas to exist on, you know. And that's not saying that that's pigging out, or that's not saying that that's your guilty pleasure, because they are the words that I refuse to use anymore. You know, say, yeah, like, what guilty pleasure is the most contradictory phrase, because if it's a pleasure, it's a pleasure. Mm-hmm. If it's guilty, it should never be guilt. Food should never be guilty. And that's why we've sort of built ourselves up into this really manic state of stress when it comes to food. You know, it's should I, shouldn't I? And I think, again, that comes to education, because, you know, there's so many myths perpetuated in the media about food and about diets. And the word diet should be banned forever. It's like I say, we took Gizmo and we kind of walked away with the gremlin. You know, we destroyed the word and everything it stands for. The word diet in the dictionary is actually the foods that we eat on a daily basis to exist. And that's really all it should be. You know, deprivation diets. I recoined the phrase diet in the book, because when you're speaking about the word diet is a beautiful, healthy word. It's the foods that you consume. Deprivation diets, quick fix diets, yo-yo diets, that's when diet just became sort of masticized. You know, it's just a dirty word because of that.
I think as well, like, trusting your gut, and like what you said, you're never going to feel great after eating junk food or fast food, and it's kind of like taking a minute to reflect on how your body feels. And you'll never feel bad after eating, you know, avocado or a gorgeous hearty homemade curry or something like that, you know. And it's just all about kind of being in tune with yourself and checking exactly in with yourself. Who would you look up to, Amanda? Like, for me, I love Oprah and I love Gabby Bernstein, and they're all people that I'm learning off, and I still have so much to learn. But who do you turn to?
Oh, so many. Both Oprah and Gabby. My God, I love those two women so much. I also love Brené Brown. Yes. Brené is wonderful. She talks about vulnerability. She talks about shame. You know, she shines a light on these things, and they're not anything to be afraid of. I love Eckhart Tolle. He's just a king in my eyes. But I love Paulo Coelho. I don't know if you've ever read The Alchemist.
No.
That's a, it's a beautiful, beautiful book. It's sort of, again, I think it's sort of the original Gabby Bernstein, Universe Has Your Back. So it's about Santiago, who is this little Andalusian shepherd boy who goes in search of his treasure, whatever that treasure might be. He doesn't know what it is. He doesn't know if it's gold coins or if it's something else. And he sells his sheep and he goes on this journey and he comes across bad omens. And the crux of the book and this underlying gorgeous little undercurrent is that the universe will conspire to have your back. And it's just, it's a beautiful fable about life and following your heart and chasing your dreams. So yeah, that's they're my top faves that I can think of off the top of my head.
Your book is fab. It's by the time this podcast is out, it will be out. And I saw the video of you opening the box and taking it out and holding it in your hand for the first time. And you've spoken about having, you know, that positive voice in your head and the voice that doesn't put you down. So what was that moment like? I mean, do you worry about charts and who's going to buy it, or do you allow yourself to just be so happy in the moment that you've achieved this?
Exactly that. I've learned the hard way, actually, to live in the moment, because for the longest time, for most of my life, I've lived, like I was saying before, about all the successes that I had, that I just kept on going to the next thing without celebrating the success of the one before. And this is, you know, it's sort of such a pivotal moment for me because it's the first time I've ever written a book. Having my book baby in the world is a terrifying feeling.
Yeah.
It's your thoughts, your words, it's your processes. And this in particular, because as you say, I had to be so raw and honest in the book. And it was it's really important for me to, you know, I have to let that go. And that book is out there now. People have it in their hands. You've read it. It's a physical sort of manifestation of the last three decades of my life, my whole life, actually, four decades, nearly five decades. And that moment of opening the box, I wasn't sure what to expect. And I thought, let's make a video of it, because authors make videos of themselves opening boxes, right? So I went into that process doing what I thought I should do, because that's what people want to see on social media. And again, I learned a lesson that day, because I wasn't even paying attention to what I was saying or the camera. My husband had the camera. And all I remember was shaking like a leaf, and then I remember shaking as I held the book and thought, this isn't about anyone else in this moment. This is about me. This is this one moment where I can take this in, and this is never going to happen again with this particular book.
I love books that have a few recipes at the back, and yours, I was delighted to see that yours did. And I'll leave you with this question. I won't keep you too much longer, but do you have a favorite recipe in it? Because it's all really simple, easy to make. Most people would have these ingredients in their press, and they're all just fresh and so nutritious and just gorgeous. I love myself the stuffed peppers recipe. I'm definitely going to try that one.
Yay! I do love those. Actually, I created those in a cottage in Dingle about 5 years ago. We had very, very sparse ingredients, because my husband and I, it was the first time I'd taken him to Dingle, and we went for New Year's Eve, and there was a tiny, tiny little shop that had very few things in it. And so we just sort of rustled up these things. We had quinoa with us, and they only had peppers, and anyway, so this was literally just rustled up in that cottage. So I'm delighted you like that. The recipe part was really important for me, because I am a very simple cook. I don't cook extravagant meals. You know, I'm productive a lot of the time, so I don't really have time to sort of spend 2 hours pouring over a meal. So for me, it was really important to give recipes that were super quick, really easy. And then in the bit with the Amanda's Cupboard Essentials, every single recipe contains every single thing in that. So it's a half a page of things to have in your pantry.
And oh, wow.
Every single recipe contains whatever's in those. So I will say, though, my favourites are probably my two grannies' recipes. So I gave my dad's mum, my granny Perrin, and my granny Mary a nod in the two. So it's the coddle for my Irish granny. That was what we would go into her house on a Saturday afternoon, she would always have a pot of coddle. There'd be the sausage and strings at the bottom and the barley, and sometimes she'd have pig's trotters and sometimes she'd have cow's tongue. So that's a real big memory for me. And then my Iranian grandmother, my dad's mom, she just made the most incredible curries from all her own spices. So my mom creates her own spices, and I actually give, you know, it takes a little bit more time, and I just thought, why don't I just give that to the readers? I'll tell them how to make their own curry spice, like from literally my granny's mouth to their plate. So yeah, it was really lovely to have a nod to both of those in it.
Amanda, thank you for your time. Enjoy the next couple of weeks. I'm sure you're going to be inundated with interviews and running around, but you're such a gift to us all with everything you've learned, and thank you so much for sharing it with us.
Oh, Georgie, you're such a gem, and honestly, I'm so honoured to speak to you. Thank you so much for all the information that you've passed on to women and men over the last while. So thank you.
Oh, thank you. I hope I get to meet you in person someday. Have a great day, Amanda.
Please God.
Thanks for listening to the Go Glow podcast, with thanks to Spotlight Oral Care. If you enjoyed this episode, please subscribe to my podcast and leave a review. It would really mean a lot. And if you want to learn more about my story, you can follow me on Instagram at georgie.crawford or head over to my website, thegoglow.ie.